This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. When ABC announced this fall that it would cancel Selfie after only 6 episodes, fans reacted with petitions and harsh words for the network on Twitter. Critics posted their regrets on Salon and The New Republic. Television critic and film studies professor Philip Masiak found himself much more interested in watching the remaining episodes of a show that did not yet know that it was dead. What, he asked on the Dear Television blog on the Los Angeles Review of Books, can we understand about our own viewing practices by reveling in the God's eye view of a crashing train? Television fans, welcome to the revelatory pastime of necro-streaming. Philip Masiak is going to guide us through. Hello, Philip.
Hi, Virginia.
Let's hear just a little clip from Selfie, which had achieved a kind of cult status and a will-they-or-won't-they romantic tension between leads Karen Gillan and John Cho.
I don't want you to think that I value my job more than I value a friendship. Because I swear... it's a tie.
A tie?
Yes, a tie.
There is no way that you came galloping out here on that majestic horse bathed in moonlight to tell me it's a tie.
I took the least majestic horse, I swear. In the stable, this thing looked like a donkey.
John Cho there with Karen Gillan. It didn't get a lot of viewers, the show, but it wasn't a mercy killing by ABC. A lot of people really liked it. What did you think?
I liked it a lot. The reason I was paying attention to it at all is that Dear Television did a kind of recap of the new sitcoms at the beginning of the season. And I did this with my friend Jane Hu. And Selfie was really the one that stood out of all of the new crop of sitcoms as being a little bit smarter than the rest of them, having performances that were a little bit more compelling, a little bit more fully realized. And it was by no means a perfect show, but it was certainly one that looked like it had a little bit of promise. And I think the cult following that you mentioned is kind of a testament to that, or testimony to that.
But does knowing it's canceled make it better to you somehow?
I don't know if it makes it better, but it certainly makes it a more interesting viewing experience. I think the reason why I zeroed in on Selfie especially is because outside of its kind of, you know, socially progressive casting and its kind of, you know, sharp sense of humor, it wasn't a show that, you know, somebody like me would spend that much time writing about, or that my readers would spend that much time reading about, except for the fact that it got canceled. I think having it be canceled, and more importantly, having there be still episodes left after the cancellation, made it a slightly more interesting thing to behold. You could watch it try to find its feet with full knowledge that it wasn't ever going to find its feet, or you could hope for a resolution to a plot line, or hope for, you know, one or two little glitches in the way that the show was written to get sorted out, knowing that you might well never see those things happen.
You did compare it to a similarly risky show with a similarly explosive female lead, is I think how you put it. Jane the Virgin, mm-hmm. This was on the CW
right.
Network. Golden Globe for acting for Gina Rodriguez last week. Now here she is in a scene with Andrea Nevedo, who plays her mother.
How was your meeting with your father?
How do you think it was? We're strangers. I don't know anything about him and he doesn't know anything about me.
I'm sorry, Jane.
Yeah. You know, you keep saying that. But it's hard to get to the it's okay part because it's not okay. What you did to me, what you took away from me, it's not okay. And I just don't understand how you could have done it.
Because you're not a mother yet.
Okay, that's a show that made it, a scene from Jane the Virgin. Back to that comparison with Selfie then. Why does this work and Selfie doesn't? Or I guess to go with what you were talking about, what would it look like if it were on the chopping block?
Right. I think that was the main comparison. I mean, I think, to be clear, I think Jane the Virgin is a pretty solidly better show than Selfie really ever was. The leads are fantastic, especially Gina Rodriguez, who just won the Golden Globe. And the show itself is a much more complicated and sort of interestingly constructed piece of television, the way that it mashes together a telenovela and sitcom and romantic comedy and drama all together is really – it's a fantastic piece of work. But I think at the time that I wrote the piece, Jane the Virgin and Selfie were, you know, similarly shows that were just starting to gain an audience, just starting to sort of show their full potential. And I think it's an interesting kind of thought experiment to imagine how we would have seen, say, the rest of the first season of Jane the Virgin if it had been canceled after 4 or 5 episodes, mm-hmm. just in the same way that we saw Selfies. So some of the kind of more outlandish jokes, some of the kind of riskier moves that Gina Rodriguez made as an actress, you know, instead of being praised by us as things that kept the show afloat, could very easily have been read by viewers as signs that that ship was sinking, very much like a lot of the things that we see on Selfie.
Yeah, I can imagine that sort of, you know, sinking, the cringy feeling that, oh, no wonder it was canceled kind of thing.
Exactly.
I'm speaking with the TV critic and film studies professor Philip Masiak about necro-streaming. That is the practice of watching or binging on television shows that have already been canceled and how that really changes the viewing experience. Well, Philip, we talk about necro-streaming shows that don't know yet that they are dead, but are shows that know they're getting the axe, and how they play with that notion can be interesting. Here's a clip. This is from the second to the last episode of Arrested Development. It was called Exit Strategy. Now, they knew they were getting the axe. In this scene, Michael Bluth has discovered a model home in Iraq inhabited entirely by Saddam Hussein impersonators. How Arrested Development of a construction is that? Let's hear.
Scar on that one dude's forehead's got to be a problem.
Ah, that's Ahmed. Never stop watching the trial. We are all following it pretty closely.
I understand. They put this guy away. You guys are out of a job, huh?
Yes, and we wanted to keep the house for just one more season.
That show was revived by Netflix, and we also think of Freaks and Geeks, a show that knew it was being canceled. Now, how did they tie it up?
Well, Freaks and Geeks, I think, attempted to give a kind of sense of closure. I don't think it was as sort of meta and self-conscious as Arrested Development's. But I do think that, you know, this is a spoiler, although it's years past, so I'm not really afraid about spoiling it for people. But having Lindsay Weir, the protagonist of the show, run off with a bunch of hippies following the Grateful Dead was both a kind of romantic way to end the show and also a kind of silly way to end the show, to sort of imagine that, you know, there's freaks and there's geeks and then there's, you know, hippies. There's a third category. But I think that phenomenon is a kind of allied phenomenon that happens on the part of writers and producers, right? So if necro streaming is something that we do as viewers when we know a show has been canceled, there's a different type of thing that that producers and writers will do when they know a show is getting canceled. So Freaks and Geeks and Arrested Development are big examples of this. But I even think about a show like Parks and Recreation. Mike Schur, who's the showrunner for that show, has said on a number of occasions that most of the seasons that they've shot, they've finished and wrapped without knowing if they were going to be renewed for another season. And so if you go back and watch all of the seasons of Parks and Recreation, they end generally on a note where the showrunner would feel okay ending the series on that note. Well, and I think a lot of shows that are on the edge like that tend to do similar things.
So let's talk about the difference between a show that knows it has come to its end. I mean, I'm thinking of The Sopranos, for example, or Seinfeld, sure. Or Lost. The last episodes of those shows became significant in and of themselves and are still even talked about compared to a series like HBO's Deadwood. Did Deadwood know it was getting canceled?
You know, I'm not 100% sure that it did. I believe that David Milch wrote the last, you know, few episodes with the idea that there would be closure there in case it didn't go on. Although you shouldn't quote me on that. Mm-hmm. But I think that there's a difference. You know, it doesn't always favor the thing you'd think it would favor between a show that is able to fully craft its perfect ending and a show that has the rug pulled out from under it. I think something like, you know, a show like Selfie or any number of other shows, you know, can very often have this kind of pleasant sense of possibility at the end of the run. So you can think about where it would have gone or what might have happened. We don't know what season 2, 3, or 4 of Freaks and Geeks would have been like. Whereas something like Lost, which had a highly anticipated ending and showrunners who were really concerned about crafting a perfect ending, that ending really fell flat for a lot of people. And I think you know, you ask a lot of fans, and I won't say if I'm one of them, although I totally am, who would say that I would have been happy if they would have just been canceled at the end of the second to last season. And that ending, even though it lacks the kind of closure that the ultimate ending did, would have been a little bit more satisfying to me because I felt that it was really a part of the way that the show operated and part and parcel of what I liked about it.
Is there a right way then, Philip, to tie up a show? I mean, ending on a good note can, you know, help sort of hide a multitude of sins, I guess.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's really true. And we have a great, you know, deal of examples of both good and bad endings. So, you know, Cheers is always an ending that gets trotted out as a kind of perfect ending, or MASH. Whereas we have Lost and Seinfeld as endings that of beloved shows that kind of fell flat with audiences. It's hard to say. And I think a lot of times a showrunner or a writer's room feels that they need to sort of move outside of what the show normally does in order to end it. So Seinfeld, for instance, had this big kind of field trip and they go to jail and all of this crazy stuff happens, which is very out of keeping with the ordinary way that Seinfeld was shot. I think it'll be really interesting to see, for instance, how Mad Men ends in just a couple of months. Another ending that's been really, really hotly anticipated and could either, you know, go the way of MASH and be counted as one of its best episodes, or be really divisive like Lost or even The Sopranos.
Mad Men, my prediction, they all run off and join the Grateful Dead.
If only.
Philip Maciak teaches English and film at LSU and writes the Dear Television blog for the LA Review of Books. Thanks so much, Philip.
Thanks. It's always a pleasure.
You can read his article about the instructive nature of necro streaming. There's a link at wordofmouthradio.org.